a local homeless shelter. People who came to this church came from all walks of life. There were rich, there were poor, there were those who smelled good and those who didn't really smell good. There were people who were experiencing homelessness who came to this church, those who struggled to make a living. And this particular girl, Alexis, she came from the housing projects. And she would come to church by herself. No parents, no older siblings, just this 10-year-old girl. She would come to church by herself. We had a van ministry who would pick up kids from that neighborhood of the local housing, government housing projects, and take them to church every Sunday when their parents did not go to church. She was a beautiful girl with this big smile. But deep inside, I can't even begin to imagine the amount of pain and grief that she has experienced as only a 10-year-old girl. At only 10 years old, she has experienced more grief and more pain than maybe many of us have experienced in our lifetimes. I remember so clearly her telling me how she's often left alone at home because her mom was too busy trying to pay the bills. When Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, unless you become like children," could he be saying to be like this little girl? Little did I know that 2 years after my experience with Alexis, I would become the children's pastor of this church. I'd be responsible for over 120 kids just like Alexis. Each child with his or her own story, most of these children living in poverty. Most of these children living in single parent households. Most of these children having experienced abuse or neglect. Many of these children having been molested or sexually assaulted by aunts, uncles, friends, family members. Many of these children having witnessed drug deals and gang violence. Many of these children having experienced homelessness at least one time in their life. Many of these children will eventually go into the foster care system here. Could it be that Jesus was saying that we should be like these children? Research shows that 1 in 4 girls will be sexually assaulted by the time they are 18 years old. 1 in 4 girls. For boys, the number is 1 in 6. 1 in 6. Many times the abuse is a family secret that is passed on from one generation to the other. In Georgia alone, 11,551 children were entered into Child Protective Services last year. 11,551 children. The number one cause of them entering into the system was neglect. Their parents just didn't take care of them, left them alone. As we are speaking, 415,000 children in the United States are in foster care. In 2014, over 60,000 children were waiting to be adopted in the United States. So how could it be that Jesus calls us to be like children? How could it be that children like these, those awaiting to be adopted to loving families, those looking for a permanent home, those who are so vulnerable, who have been abused and neglected, how could they be inheritors of the kingdom of heaven? In this section of Matthew, we see that Jesus' disciples still had a premature understanding of what it meant to be a disciple of Jesus. What does it mean to be a disciple of Jesus of Nazareth? To understand this more, we have to remember that Jesus was a Jewish rabbi, and his disciples were Jewish disciples. See, during this time, there were many, many rabbis. They all had different interpretations of what it means to be faithful to the Torah, to the laws of Moses, to this holy book. If you became a disciple, you subjected yourself to your rabbi's teachings. Everything that your rabbi taught, you listened and you did. If you've made it to discipleship, you've passed the elementary and intermediate stages of your education, and now you're in this intensive training with your rabbi who chose you. You were the best of the best. The rabbi only chose disciples that he thought could follow in his footsteps. If you think that you wouldn't make the cut, you didn't make the cut. You couldn't be his student. You had to be the best of the best to be a disciple of a rabbi. So a disciple not only knows what his rabbi knows, but a disciple also does what his rabbi does. They talk the talk and they walk the walk, you could say. Consequently, as a disciple, you couldn't just pick and choose which teachings you wanted to follow from your rabbi. No, you had to do what your rabbi taught you to do. You followed in his footsteps, remember? They lived out the teachings that their rabbi Jesus taught them. So when they asked Jesus, "Jesus, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And when Jesus answered, "Change and be like children," there's tremendous weight to it that was significant. They were really to become like children. Isn't that confusing? Be like children? Jesus, really? In Jesus' time, to be like children isn't to be innocent. It's not to be this pure and innocent little thing. Jesus isn't calling his disciples to be pure and innocent like children, no. We see throughout scriptures that children were rebellious. That they already have the sin particle within them and they were understood to be bad sometimes, right? Children aren't all sweet. And I'm sure you know that, especially you parents. I'm sure you parents know how rebellious children can be. Even the youngest of children can be bad, right? You say no, then what happens? They kick and scream. They probably fall on the floor and cry and yell at the top of their lungs, even in the grocery store, embarrassing you. Or maybe you sweetly tell them to, like, come here. You're down on the ground with your arms wide open, and you're like, "Come here, baby." And the baby wobbles, walking towards you, but then at the final second turns around and runs the other direction. But even with their rebellious and energetic spirit, children are among the most vulnerable people. They're powerless. They have no rights. They have no significance apart from their future value to their family through their future work. They can't do anything for you. Furthermore, in the Gospel of Matthew, we see that children are often described in the most depressing ways. They're tormented by sickness. They're possessed by demons. They're on the verge of death. They were never described as sweet, loving, and innocent. No. They were helpless people in need of God's divine grace. Children, after all, are unable to protect themselves. They're unable to provide for themselves. They're weak. They're vulnerable. So if we are to be greatest in the kingdom of heaven, we too must be vulnerable. We must turn away from our own self-seeking, power-hungry hearts and allow ourselves to be vulnerable. We must be vulnerable enough to daily receive mercy and grace from God for this life. Instead of priding ourselves on our human accomplishments and achievements, maybe we are called to position our hearts to continuously receive God's mercy, just like vulnerable, defenseless children. Maybe we're called to let go of our grown-up independence, of which I know I enjoy so much, and position my heart and life to a place where I would constantly have to receive the grace of God in my life. This is the discipleship that Jesus invites his disciples to. Just as children have nothing without the adults caring for them, we too are called to the state of weakness, defenselessness, and vulnerability. But how difficult it is to be vulnerable. How difficult it is to be defenseless. I already have issues allowing myself to sit in the passenger seat of a car and letting someone drive me. Ever since I received my driver's license in high school, I was the one behind the wheel. If my friends wanted to go to the mall, I drove them. If my friends wanted to go out of town, I drove. And the one time I let my friend drive us out of town, we got into a car accident where her car was totaled. And don't let me, you know, you don't even have to talk about my younger brother and me being in the passenger seat, because I have to be heavily medicated in order for that to happen. It's not easy to become childlike, to have to sit in the booster seat or car seat in the passenger side with no power. It's not easy to lay down your power and exchange it for humility, is it? It's countercultural. It's unnatural. Darwin teaches us that it's only the greatest, the fittest that survive. Right? But Jesus teaches us that the greatest is indeed the humblest. Still, how exceedingly difficult is it to be able to surrender power and security to an invisible God? If I have to be heavily medicated in order to sit in the passenger seat while my younger brother is driving, how much more medication do I need to surrender all of my life's power to something that's invisible, to an invisible God, a thing that I can't see? How much medication do you need in order to surrender yourself to an invisible God? And it just doesn't make sense to pack up and move to this foreign place called Atlanta, Georgia, just because you feel like it is the place that God is leading you to. When you wake up and go to work and, you know, you're somewhat reluctant to go to work because it's hard going to work, right? But you know that God is going to do something and work through you there. When a stranger comes into your life and you really want nothing to do with that person, maybe because they're different from you, maybe because it's just annoying or frustrating, I don't know. But you know that God is telling you to open up your heart to them and make a difference in their lives. When you have the opportunity to change and to go where the Spirit may lead, but there's always a fear of the unknown. When you do what others say don't make sense, that's illogical. Why are you doing that? But you know deep inside that God is calling you to do something that really doesn't make sense. All of these cases can leave our lives exposed and vulnerable. We have the power and the ability to get out of that situation, but you know, we can move from the passenger seat to the driver's seat, but it's sometimes hard to trust in an invisible God, isn't it? Actually, I'd say that it's always hard to trust in an invisible God, and I'm grateful that God knows that. God knows that it's hard to trust him. I'm grateful that Jesus did not end this explanation by saying, become like children, period. But then he continues and says, whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. And that gives me so much hope and relief. Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. Whoever welcomes a vulnerable, defenseless person welcomes Jesus. Whoever welcomes a childlike disciple welcomes Jesus. Whoever welcomes a powerless, humble disciple welcomes Jesus. It's as if Jesus is telling us the world needs a visible manifestation of my presence, so I've created you. The world needs to see to believe, so I've created you. The 120 children that I pastored were like little rascals. They were so bad at times. Although they did not grow up in the healthiest of environments, although they did not have many material things, although they did not have much security, they were welcomed by us, the church. Even though they would run around the sanctuary, even though they would scream and yell, even though sometimes they'd run out of the church onto the railroad tracks, they were welcomed by us still, the church. Some of them rode in the van that picked them up in that neighborhood that I told you about. And others walked to church with their torn up sneakers. They had holes in their shoes and they came. They came week after week. They came and they were welcomed as smelly as their feet could be. And yes, they took off their shoes during Sunday school to feel comfortable, and their feet stunk so bad. They still came and they received grace for that day. The graces we could offer them weren't much. When most of the people in your congregation are living at the poverty line or lower, there's not much budget for a Sunday school. But still, these children received the graces that we could give them that day. The graces took form in tight, safe hugs with the kids. Whenever the worship was playing, we just hugged them tight. In the powerful words, you are beautiful, especially to a girl that means so much. And the animal crackers and goldfish for those who haven't eaten since lunch at school on Friday. And the laughter that we could share together through the sharing of stories, the graces took the form of dancing our worries away. We love to dance. And singing songs that reminded us of how much our great God loved us. Sharing with one another the things that were important to us, like Pokemon and football. And in the gospel story to remind us that there is more to life than what we are experiencing right now. Even while I was writing this sermon, I started tearing up because I miss these kids so much. They taught me so much about what the kingdom of heaven is like. And after I wrote this sermon, I finished the sermon on Sunday last week. And after I finished writing the sermon, all these current events started happening, right? The shooting in Oklahoma and Charlotte. Then my heart became so heavy again. Because most of these children that I pastored were Black or Hispanic. They would grow up to look like these men on TV who are being shot. They're vulnerable. Just because of the color of their skin, just because of the size that they're going to be when they grow up. The things that they can't change, they can't change the prejudice against them. They are powerless. defenseless, vulnerable. There's this beautiful poem by Saint Teresa of Avila. It says, "Christ has no body now but yours. No hands, no feet now but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks compassion on this world. Christ has no body now on earth but yours. Christ has no body now on earth but yours. We are the visible sign of an invisible grace. Not only are we to be vulnerable people, but we are called to be vulnerable people to vulnerable people, caring for vulnerable people. We are called to show the world that God's reign and God's grace is here in this world today. And that gives me hope that God would choose us broken people to show the world that there is grace, that God's grace is real and God's grace is here in this world. Christ has no body now on earth but yours, church. No hands, no feet now on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks compassion on this world. Christ has no body now on earth but yours." Let's pray. God,